for the week of July 10th, 2016. This is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 328, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Nashville, I'm Michael Giltz.
How is Nashville, Michael? I was just listening to Margot Price's album. I know we talked about her last week, but I was just listening to it again over the weekend.
Well, it's great. It's lovely weather. I'm just looking outside. Oh, my God. That's Pikachu in my neighbor's barbecue pit. I got to go.
Wait a second. I think you might be smoking a little bit of that stuff.
No, I can see Pikachu through my phone sitting on my neighbor's barbecue. I have to go.
Why would Pikachu be sitting? Well, first of all, what are you doing looking at your neighbor's barbecue through your phone?
It's Pokemon Go. Do you not know this?
Actually, I do know this, of course. We're going to be talking about it later.
We are, but first we're going to talk about the fact that you, how do you say Pokemon in French? You will not be available for the next 2 weeks.
That is correct.
Blame Sperling. It's the August vacation known throughout Europe, but of course you're an American, but you're going to France, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm going to France, so say hello if you see me. And you happen.
Bonjour.
Yes, I guess that would be how you say hello in France, especially if you're French. But hopefully we'll be retooling the show a little bit while I'm away.
Are you getting rid of me?
No. Just, you know, the formatting. We've talked about it offline, so to speak.
No video yet.
No video, because, you know, we figure we'll do that. Well, how long was radio around before they started, television?
I think radio is still around.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm kind of going back to the early 1900s.
So we're going to retool the show. You're going to be in France. But meanwhile, we have this week's show. What are we going to talk about?
Well, on this week's show, we'll check out the roller coaster that is the Chinese box office
for
the
again.
First, again, yeah, because, you know, it's not a week here on Showbiz Sandbox unless we're talking about the box office in China.
I noticed that the Hollywood Reporter now is doing a weekly coverage of strictly the Chinese box office.
Yeah, they've been doing that on and off for the past year, and it's not always...
It seems more consistent.
Yes, exactly. For the first time in years, it's not just slowing down, it's shrinking. Hollywood movies are dominating over there in China, but that hasn't stopped the Chinese government from loosening the reins to let in more Hollywood movies just to sell more tickets. And so what happens? Chinese movies dominate their local box office this weekend. During Inside Baseball, we'll immerse ourselves in virtual reality, as Michael, you were just mentioning. And why? Because people are finally learning about virtual reality and augmented reality in the best way possible, by playing a game. Pokemon Go launched over the weekend, and it is a huge hit, a game changer, and the first of what's sure to be many new products making clever use of VR, or in this case, AR, augmented reality. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll cover the week's top entertainment headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on the weekend's box office.
That's right, and we're looking at box office around the world. We get our information from ComScore. You'll find a link in our show notes. We also look at Box Office Profit, Box Office Mojo, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, the LA Times, you name it. And the number one movie around the world is The Secret Life of Pets. Thank God for a good trailer. That's what Universal is saying. This movie opened to $110 million worldwide. It's now at $145 million because it had already opened up overseas at a massively successful North American debut. Talk.
$75 million to make this movie, not $150 or $180 million, which is what, a Finding Dory will cost or one of the Pixar films.
A price they are happy to pay. Look, there's different types of movies. There's medium-sized movies and big movies. It's not like, hey, you don't need to spend that money to make Finding Dory. It's, you know, The Avengers is a different movie than Me Before You.
No, I'm not arguing that. No, I'm saying, look, they made their money back in one weekend in North America alone.
Well, they grossed their money.
Yes, correct. Yes, you're right. They grossed their money, which is usually a good sign when you can gross more than your budget that you'll make your money back.
I think one person said, I really should have looked this up, but opening weekend, and of course, in this case, we're looking at the first 4 days because opening weekend in North America now includes Thursday. So we're comparing apples to oranges. But when you look at all the movies that have opened up in North America, only 39 have opened to $100 million or more, which this technically did if you throw in the Thursday numbers. And they said that this is the only movie that is original to do so.
Really?
Everything else was a sequel, a franchise, a spinoff. It was based on a pre-existing property like Harry Potter. You know, it's not that it wasn't, they were all sequels, but they were all movies based on something else that pre-existed with a known factor to it. This is the first one to open up that is purely original.
You know what? I'm going to look into that because I smell a celluloid junkie post coming on.
If it's true.
If it's true, yeah. I'm definitely going
to
look into that.
I meant to look it up, but I ran out of time. But there's a lot to say about this. Some people say, oh, look, now Illumination is like Pixar. It's a name brand that people are trusting. I say malarkey.
Yeah,
I couldn't have even named Illumination as being the company, yeah, much less most people in America.
Well, and that's all about branding, right? Because
it'll take them a long time to reach the level of Pixar or Disney or, you know, Lucasfilm or whatever it may be, Amblin. But people did not run to this movie because it's from Illumination and they're the guys who did Despicable Me.
No, and when you think about it, the first guy who makes a space Western that's really good and becomes a phenomenon, you'll remember that person's name, okay? But like the third or fourth guy, the guy who directs, like, I don't know, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, you know, the second one there, the movie that everybody loves, Star Trek II. Yeah. Do you know who directed that? Exactly. So there's my point.
You're asking me?
Yeah. By the way, I only know this because I was watching like the 80s, some show on the 80s.
Isn't it the same guy? Isn't it Nicholas Meyer?
Yes, it is.
All right. I mean, Robert Wise directed Star Trek. Nicholas Meyer directed Star Trek 2.
Right. He also directed The Day After.
And Time After Time, which is a cute little movie about Jack the Ripper coming, stealing H.G. Wells' time machine. It's a clever little movie. I could have done that, but there were movie geeks. But yeah, most people could not name Nicholas Meyer, obviously, if that's your point. So yeah, I think this movie worked because it had a great trailer. They've been promoting it for a year. The first trailer for The Secret Life of Pets debuted a year ago, and they've built it up well. Somebody said, oh, people love animated films about pets. No, for God's sakes, or animals. It's like, no, that is, you know, Zootopia and Finding Dory and The Secret Life of Pets are three very different films. They're all animated, but they're very different movies. And it's not because they have animals in them that people went to see it. They saw the trailer, they laughed, they wanted to see it.
Well, also, you know, animated films with animals in them, you know, there's a reason that animals are in animated films. Yeah. They can talk in animated films. It's a lot harder to find the talking animals in real life and cast them.
Right. Like the fish in Finding Dory, that grossed $50 million over the weekend. $640 million worldwide. It still has a lot of territories to open up in.
Yeah, this is a monster hit. I mean, yeah, such a monster. Yeah.
It's going to be a billion-dollar movie. At number three is The Legend of Tarzan, which, if you want to get into the expectations games, did better than expected, though it wasn't enough to be good, depending on its budget. But second weekend, it held okay. Nonetheless, it made $47 million over the weekend, $140 million worldwide. It's going to have to gain a lot of ground to get into the black. And number four is one of those Chinese films that did very well, Cold War II. This is a Hong Kong Chinese thriller about the wife of a police commissioner being taken hostage. It made $44 million just in China alone. It's in one territory. It stars a lot of name brand Asian stars like Aaron Kwok, Tony Leung, and Chow Yun-fat. It gave everybody a big sigh of relief in China. Hey, we can still make big, profitable blockbuster movies. They had a few weeks there where they got scared.
What, and like they don't have a big, you know, $100 million hit one weekend and that's it? That, the industry's
absolutely
over.
Well, when the box office shrinks for the first time in ages, that is very notable. We'll get to that in a minute.
So they are just like, they are copying Hollywood.
What do you mean?
In that, you know, the box office dips for a week and it's the sky is falling.
Absolutely. And number five is another animated film, Ice Age Collision Course. $32 million over the weekend. It's at just about $60 million worldwide. We don't know the budget, but the last one cost about $100 million. It's the fifth in the series, and it's getting terrible reviews.
Yeah, you know, so, I remember actually doing the junket for the very first Ice Age. And I remember,
oh, happy time.
Yeah, and I kind of went back and looked at when that was, and I thought, oh my God, that's one of the last times I saw John Leguizamo, in fact. And I thought, wow. Yeah, he's been working quite a lot. And they must be filthy rich from these movies to keep on doing them.
Well, but this one is maybe the last for a while. I think they've sort of run their course. It's not very well reviewed. I don't think it's going to have great legs. Secret Life of Pets could kind of crush it. But then what will they say? Oh, they don't like animated movies with animals in them.
Only mammoths. If it's a woolly mammoth and it's animated, you know, they've kind of run their course.
Yet another animated film, back to China, Big Fish and Begonia. depending on how you translate the title. This is an animated movie. They've been working on it for 12 years. It's highly influenced by Miyazaki, and everybody's been very excited by this movie as a real step forward in artistry for Chinese animation. It grossed $32 million on its opening weekend. It's a handcrafted film. It looks very Miyazaki-like if you look at the trailer online. I saw somewhere that it cost $5 million, but that just doesn't make any sense to me. But I don't know what it costs. You know, people can craft it in their rooms, you know, and make animated films for low budgets. But this looks like a more lavish project than that. And it's a big hit, as is So Young 2, Never Gone, which is a Chinese romantic drama about young lovers who are fated to be together from high school through adult life. $26 million on its opening weekend. So a good week for China with So Young 2 and Big Fish and Begonia, a real step forward in artistry, and Cold War 2, all showing that they can still have big bang at the box office. That's unlike Independence Day Resurgence, $30 million over the weekend, $300 million worldwide. Needs to get to half a billion just to be in the black, and maybe it'll get there. At number 9 is Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. This opened in 20 territories, but here in North America, it did okay. It's another Zac Efron raunchy comedy. Remember when he was a nice kid starring in Disney movies?
I do.
Yeah, it made $20 million this weekend, $3 million overseas, $16 million in North America. It did okay. It cost $33 million to make, got pretty bad reviews, but no one's going to lose their shirt. And number 10 is Central Intelligence. Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson, another $18 million. That's at $150 million worldwide, which we think triples its budget. So everybody's happy with that one. As they are with The Purge, Election Year, another $14 million. That's at $60 million. And for a movie that costs $10 million, that's a great result. And it's nowhere near done. It's got a lot of overseas territories. And tying into the election year, it might just have really good legs. Finally, at number 12, a Bollywood movie, another big opening weekend for a big movie in Asia. This is Sultan. It's a sports drama, and it stars Salman Khan, who's one of the biggest stars in Bollywood. He's a wrestler who gains huge fame but loses the love of his life until he learns humility. It opened to $20 million. It didn't open. It's apparently been in some territories already. It made $20 million this weekend. Perhaps it opened on Wednesday. It's now at $32 million and counting. That did open up in North America, as did some other movies in North America, though you won't always find them on the charts. What am I talking about?
Well, first off, I know what you're talking about. I'm really surprised that Sultan made $2.2 million here in the U.S., okay? A movie that I don't think made that much money, and the movie that you are referring to, I think, is Under the Sun. And this is the documentary about North Korea, directed by Vitaly Mansky, that we talked about or referenced a few weeks ago, because you might recall, Michael, this was the documentary that Sally Berger, an assistant curator over at MoMA, she'd worked there 20 to 30 years, I think maybe even 30 years, and she kind of, it was supposed to play in their 2016 doc Fortnite, and she said, yeah, no, we're not going to play it because,
she unilaterally removed it, and they fired her. We assume there were other things going on as well, but that was a black eye for MoMA, and they were unhappy about that. The film is interesting. You said you hadn't caught up with how it was done. He'd sort of been working, this director, with the North Korean government. They gave him permission to make a documentary, and he tricked them, because once they started to clamp down on what he could do, he just left the digital cameras rolling all day long. And so he made a film out of what happened when the cameras were supposed to be off. So it's an interesting movie, interesting project. It opened up in New York at Film Forum. And I go to look on the charts, and it's nowhere to be found.
Yeah, and it's in a few theaters here in Los Angeles as well, and it's kind of making the rounds throughout the country. And it's usually only playing for a week. It's played in a few festivals, and it's gotten generally good reviews. I mean, what's interesting to me is you say he worked with the North Korean government. The North Korean government, after 2 years of negotiations, allowed him to make this movie, provided that they script it, and they approve every shot, and that they basically direct it. He wasn't allowed to talk to the actors, who weren't actors at all.
Well, what did he expect?
Yeah, no, exactly. And so, as you say, he just left the cameras rolling, and he had two memory cards. He would swap the memory cards out and copy the memory cards before handing it over to the North Koreans every night. So he was kind of being a little risky. And he kind of went twice, two trips to direct this film. He was supposed to go back a third time, but they canceled the trip. So the film that he was supposed to be directing never got finished.
So what? Why is it not on the box office charts? You can find movies like the Norman Lear documentary. It only grossed $8,000 this week, and it's on the charts.
And where's it playing?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, because technically what's happening there is Film Forum isn't reporting the gross to RentTrak or ComScore. They might report it to the distributor, and I know they report it to the distributor because they have to pay film rental on it. The same thing is true of Lemley, where the film Under the Sun is playing here in Los Angeles. So it's the theaters not reporting the grosses to third-party box office aggregators,
Like with Purple Rain, where I was confused why we weren't seeing box office numbers for Purple Rain when it was playing at, I think it was AMC. So they can just choose willy-nilly not to report it to those third-party companies. I would think it was all automated and the info would go out. It's not like they pick up a phone, is it?
No, not anymore. Certainly with Lemley and maybe even the Film Forum, they probably are picking up a phone. But I know AMC, they're not. It's all automated. And yet they
prevented Purple Rain info from going over the wire.
Well, and when I spoke to Paul DeGarabedian about it, I ran into him during this whole, when Purple Rain was still in theaters a couple months ago in May. And he said he was shocked, too, that there were no numbers. And he called AMC and even the people that he normally deals with there couldn't get the numbers. And his thinking was that maybe the codes that every film is coded in the system didn't come through properly or they couldn't.
Well, no, they could have picked up the phone and said, hey, we want to report these good numbers. They expanded and left it in there for another weekend and they still didn't report it. So they knew the problem and could have easily corrected it.
Yeah, and they decided maybe purposefully not to.
Right. So that's what's going on with Under the Sun. It disappeared from North Korea, and now it sort of disappeared from the box office. But hopefully, if you're interested, you'll check it out. Maybe they'll play it in China. They don't like North Korea. Well, actually, they're sort of allies. What am I talking about?
I was just going to say, I don't know. What I love is that they asked this director, the North Koreans were like, hey, can you come back? We'd like to talk to you about a few things. And the director, Mansky, said, yeah, I'm not going back. I know what happens when I go back, and I'm not going back. Thank you.
Yeah. So in China, the box office in the first quarter, we talked about how it was slowing down. It was growing, still growing, but not by the leaps and bounds. It only grew 21%, which everybody else in the world would take, delightfully.
Right.
But in the second quarter, it did not grow, did it?
No, it didn't grow at all. And in fact, when you really take into consideration, I always say accounting for inflation, it actually shrank 4.6%. And of course, it's dominated by Hollywood films, which
not of course.
You're right. I don't know why I said of course.
But the second quarter is often where more Hollywood films are released, unlike the first quarter and the third quarter, which is the summer. So this is the period where Hollywood gets to play a little bit. And you did see more, you saw local movies not doing great, Hollywood movies making money, but the box office shrinking. And that sort of sent shockwaves through China, didn't it? I mean, through the theatrical business.
Yes, because of course, everybody but in this case, everybody is believing that 2017 is the year that the Chinese box office becomes the largest movie marketplace in the world. And that's at least been predicted for the past, 2 years.
And that's possible. And now it looks like it may be more like 2018.
That's correct. But when you think about the fact that it's not only shrinking, it's shrinking on more screens. A year and a half ago, there were 18,000 screens in China. There are now 39,000 commercial movie screens
in China. Doubled their screens in a year and a half.
They're opening about one new screen every
hour.
Well, yeah, I can't remember. There's some... I think it's 5 new screens every 12 days. I can't remember what the statistic is off the top of my head, but it is
staggering. So if you have twice as many screens and less money going around, you've more than halved the money per screen.
Correct. And that's the point.
That's a big problem. So what did China do? What did the government do? They said, all right, I guess we got to let in more Hollywood movies, right? We know people want to see them. We want to have these theaters not be half empty. Let's get more Hollywood movies in there.
That is exactly what they did not do. They did not do that. Instead, what they did was they said, okay, fine, you can play your movies during the summer. Normally, there's a summer blackout period, much like there is in February and around the Chinese New Year, which is why, the first quarter is not dominated by Hollywood films, and all of those films get kind of dumped in that second quarter. In this case, they're saying, okay, third quarter during the summer, you can play your films now. Usually, that was not the case in June to late August.
So they opened up the doors, but what they did was they just spread out the Hollywood movies. They're not increasing the number of Hollywood movies that get to open in China, at least not yet. That may come in the future. But they said, okay, instead of grouping them all together and opening them opposite each other, we'll let a couple of your movies play in this. I mean, when the headlines made it sound like they'd open the floodgates, and when you look at it, they said, okay, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles can open on July 2nd. Legend of Tarzan can open on July 19th, to which those filmmakers must be on their knees thanking them. And The Secret Life of Pets can open in August. So it's three movies we're talking about, not more movies, but they're changing the release dates a little bit so that they can have better play, make more money, and everybody can be happy.
So it's still 34 movies per year, imported movies. So technically that includes if you import a movie from South Korea, that's one of the 34. Although I think they've kind of relented on that a bit. And the state-run distributor, they have a kind of a monopoly on distribution. So 20th Century Fox can't go in and start 20th Century Fox China and start distributing movies. No, that has to be the state-run distributor that distributes the movie and collects the grosses and distributes it back to, sends it off to 20th Century Fox in the U.S. They are still holding that monopoly to themselves.
So China has twice as many screens. They're still building them. Their local box office slowing down a little bit. It even shrank in the second quarter, which means if you had $10,000 per screen, now you have less than $5,000, right?
That's because right.
So that's a lot less money. They need more product.
And you recall, I wish I had the time to go back and search for all of the times on this very program that I said, you wait and see when they're up to 25, 30, 35,000 screens, they're going to need product. They're going to need something to put on those store shelves. And at that point, that 34 film cap will have to rise because otherwise they can't make films fast enough to put on the screens.
And when they say we need more movies, does Hollywood say we need more cut of the box office? Is that when they hold firm and say, yeah, you want this movie? I don't want 19% of the cut. I want 22%. I want 23%. I want a scaling. I want to see it rise in the next 5 years so that I'm making 25%.
Well, I think they will be pushing on that. They will also, in February of 2017, when the 34 film quota, that deal kind of ends and they have to renegotiate it starting in February of 2017, I think they're really going to be pushing for more films in getting into the country.
They're going to say we need more movies. That's what we just said. They're going to need more movies. And when they say we're raising the quota, you can have more movies. Is that when Holland says, yeah, you want our movies? We need better terms.
Well, but here's the thing. The better terms, part of that is more movies. So it's
also the bigger cut of the box office.
But it's a pick your battle thing. You can pick your battle and
this is when you do it, when they need your movies. You're in power then. When they say we need more Hollywood movies, that's when you have the power to say, we need more cut of the box office. You don't just say, thank you very much. Can we have 10% of the box office? You say you need them. You've got all these screens. They're half empty. Give us better terms.
Well, I think the way the Chinese would look at it is we're giving you something. We'll let you bring in 45 movies.
That guarantees you won't get an increase in your cut. And why isn't it higher in the rest of the world? I still don't understand that. You're saying in North America, the studios get about 50% of the box office.
Roughly, yeah.
Why isn't it higher in other countries?
There's
myriad reasons
yes.
all over the world, but I don't understand why it's so consistent all over the world that you're lucky to get, 30%?
It's usually between 30 and 40%. Yeah. I mean, and that has to do with a number of issues per territory. That's a whole conversation unto itself. In certain territories, it's regulations. In other territories, it's historically, the exhibitor has always gotten more, and it's very difficult for distributors to push harder. And it takes time to get there. I do know that in Germany, for instance, the movie theaters weren't going to play Avengers because they did not like the 65% of the box office that Disney wanted for that film. So they just said, we're not going to play it.
Nobody gets that anywhere, do they?
Yes, they do, as a matter of fact, in the U.S. So
they don't get 65%.
Oh, yes, they do for a movie like Avengers. They do. And here's the thing, and it's something that I noticed.
If they have the if they have the muscle to do that there, I don't understand why in smaller countries where they even more need big Hollywood movies that they can't get better terms.
Well, they can.
You're saying they can get it out of North America, but they can't get it out of France.
Well, they can get it out of France has regulation issues. So
sure,
yes.
Sure. I mean, every country has rules.
And in Germany, they weren't able to get their 65% because the movie theater owners just turned around and said, all right, we won't play it. So if you want to open here in Germany, we're not playing it. You have to basically rethink your terms if you want to open in Germany. And that's what happened. They had to come back with a different set of terms. Now, in the U.S., what was interesting to me was I talked to a theater owner, and this is a theater owner that owns one historical movie theater, one screen.
Don't make it too identifiable.
It's in Hawaii, so it could be any one of the islands. It could be any one of the islands. There are a number of one-screen theaters throughout the islands.
Well, you know better than I, yeah. So this person said
that 5 weeks out, Disney was still asking 65%. So you know how like second run movies, you'll go, you pay $2 and you get to see the movie, but it's like 8 weeks out.
Right.
Okay. They were still asking for 65%. Usually it's about 35-40% of what the box, you know, the studio will take about 35%, 6, 7, 8 weeks out. They still wanted 65%.
I thought they did less of a sliding scale these days. It used to be like 90% down to 10%. I thought it was more like, let's just give us our cut no matter when it is, because it's so front loaded, you can't take that big chunk up front.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's a big deal or a big whoop, but it's exciting that Chinese box office needs more product.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll see what people like Chris Dodd over at the Motion Picture Association of America, MPAA, are able to do next February when they renegotiate this. If he and the MPAA are able to push both agenda items, one, more films, and two, better terms, then you're right, Michael, it would be a huge deal. But that does bring us to Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Here's our first story. It's about Gretchen Carlson. In case you didn't hear, Fox News fixture Gretchen Carlson has filed a lawsuit against the company's head, Roger Ailes. She was a newscaster at Fox News for those outside the country. While the actual legal basis is retaliation, the natural focus is on sexual harassment. Carlson says Ailes propositioned her and retaliated when she declined his sexual overtures. Two words I love to say together in a news item. Ailes and his lawyers hit back hard, claiming Carlson was suing because she didn't get the jobs she wanted. They point to poor ratings and the like. But now Carlson and her team can point to six other women who have stepped forward claiming sexual harassment from Ailes dating back to his days on the daytime talk show starring Mike Douglas. In other words, it's getting ugly pretty darn fast. Big deal or big whoop?
I think it's a big deal. I mean, it's a new era, right? It's hard when you're talking about every claim of sexual harassment and rape is he said, she said. And that's why it's so hard to talk about and cover. It's a little easier when it's he said, she said, she said, she said, she said, she said. So that does make it a little easier.
Yeah, although, again, I always point out these are allegations, and I think this is a post-Cosby world now, right? So it's a matter of...
I don't think there's a bandwagon of women who are looking to come forward to say, I was sexually harassed by Roger Ailes. You know, that's not going to gain you anything.
No, unless you have a beef.
Other than attacks
it.
And critiques. So, again, it's a post-Cosby world, meaning people maybe have more courage and bravery and say, hey, there's strength in numbers, now's the time to speak up when somebody comes forward and identifies themselves. And you know, hey, I can show solidarity and that can make a difference. I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I do think that there will be people who come forward, maybe in this case, maybe in others, where it's a numbers game, right? Because as you say, Michael, you know, it's a he said, she said game until it becomes many, many, many people saying the same thing. And when there's smoke, there's fire. The problem will be, and this day will probably show up at some point, where one of the people making
the vast majority of people who say they were raped or sexually harassed are telling the truth.
Oh, I completely agree.
The idea
agree.
Of people, lots of women are waiting to come forward and say they were sexually harassed by some celebrity because other people are doing, you have to be in the same place, you have to be in the same location, you have to, you know, these are people who worked with him. This is not just random people.
Oh, I'm not talking
fame.
About this case.
Right. Well,
I'm
talking about this case.
I'm just saying
the case we're discussing.
I'm just saying that at some point that
be worried about it when it happens, not when somebody who worked with Roger Ailes at Mike Douglas says, "Yeah, this guy did that to me too, and this is what he did, and this is where it happened and when, and that's people who cross paths with him. If somebody who never met him says it, then you can dismiss it out of hand. All I know is Roger Ailes says he didn't really want to report to the sons of Rupert Murdoch, and guess what? He may get his wish.
Yeah, that's true. He is reporting to them now, but he's really reporting to all three. Lachlan, his brother.
Yeah, he didn't want to talk to Lachlan and his brother.
Yeah, now James Lachlan and now the father. And now he's going to have to be doing, he has to be doing a lot of talking. How true is this? Who knows? Let the courts decide. But there is one thing that's true. And that is Lin-Manuel Miranda no longer has a ponytail. And if you don't know who that is, Lin-Manuel Miranda is the creator and the, I guess he wrote the music for Hamilton. And the Hamilton hype is
a book, the lyrics and the music, and he starred in it. And everybody knows this. Keep going.
Okay, well, the Hamilton hype is rolling on. The Broadway smash hit Hamilton continues to make waves. The final performance of Lin-Manuel Miranda and other key cast members like Philippa Sue and Mr. Odom, whose first name is now totally...
Leslie Odom.
Leslie. I wanted to say Lamar Odom, and I knew that was not correct. So Leslie Odom Jr., they are all done. They are... This prompted massive crowds outside the theater, TV cameras for miles, and even online jokes from the likes of Brent Spiner. The actors stepping into those roles are also getting remarkable heat. Usually when a show has been open for a year, it would be begging the media to pay attention to new casting. This time, when actor Brandon Victor Dixon jumped from the about-to-close musical Shuffle Along to Hamilton, it received all sorts of ink. And of course, tickets remain at a premium, meaning you can't get tickets. How come we still can't get tickets? Big deal or big whoop?
It's really kind of amazing. It's such a phenomenon, and it almost doesn't feel like just overhyped, craziness. It's like, yeah, no, it's a big deal. It's like the end of the original cast leaving the show. It's like, no, that's appropriate to talk about. That's how crazily big this show is. It's kind of shocking. But it's true. And I saw Shuffle Along, and Brandon Victor Dixon was great in it. If you're in New York, for the love of God, go see that show before it closes on July 24th, because it's a great show, too. But it's diversity, right? That's the big deal. And Disney Channel has done their own plug for diversity. They just launched the TV show Elena of Avalor. It's coming out on July 22nd. It's a new TV series, and it features Disney's first official Latina princess, or princesa, if you prefer. And it's not just a TV show. You got products, you got tie-ins at the parks. So it's a big visible launch, and it's a big deal that they're finally getting their first Latina princess.
Well, I originally thought that Lin-Manuel Miranda might, because it's only 2 months, he might come and do what he did for In the Heights, which is play it in San Francisco and perform it in Los Angeles at the Pantages. They were 1 month runs, and he did both shows. I don't think he's going to be doing that now that he cut his ponytail off.
Well, no, he's talked about maybe doing it in London when they launch it in London next year or the year later. So he might do that, and he might he said he'll stop in at times and can see himself stepping in for a month or 3 months or something into different shows in different areas, as has Leslie Odom. We'll have to see.
Oh, that's interesting. So in other words, it's kind of like a living...
Well, it runs for 10 years, 20 years. You've got your opportunity,
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
You look at Jersey Boys, and some of the stars of that came back in, for a year or two at a time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know he's got his, the Miranda, that is, has his schedule quite full. He's going to be in Mary Poppins. He's writing music. Anyway, Amazon, you might remember them, our Amazon overlords, they continue to spread into new areas. We've been talking recently about how Amazon has been a key driver behind the remarkable growth in audiobooks. Now we see them moving forward into podcasting in a bigger way. How? With the launch of Audible Channels, Amazon believes people will be willing to actually pay, say, $5 a month to get a curated selection of podcasts. Some are exclusives, and it's not just podcasts, mind you. You can also find audio versions of the New York Times, USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, and of course, the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, the founder and majority owner of Amazon. And hey, maybe it's worth it to have Amazon comb through tens of thousands of podcasts and say, this one is worth your time. And by this one, I mean the one you're listening to right now is worth your time. Big deal or big whoop?
I think it's a big deal. I think it's, just a smart expansion of everything they've got. They've already got people buying audiobooks through them. They've got that captive audience. Why not give them some new service? Just tack it on, add it on, grow your links and relationships with those people. And frankly, you've got all these newspapers and magazines creating videos Why didn't they move forward into audio? It makes sense to make an audio version. It's just a lot of work to create videos. It's a lot of work to create an audio version of the New York Times every single day. So updating that, making that happen, who reads it, how to do it, it's complicated. Amazon's gotten the rights. They're doing it, or they're doing it in partnership with them. And I think that's a very viable addition to the podcasting world, which hasn't existed before.
No, I completely agree. And we kind of talked about this a little bit over email during the week. And that is initially, you know, a lot of the podcast folks were...
Because we like to get paid.
Yeah. we were all shocked. We said, well, $5 a month, you know, you can get this stuff for free on iTunes. Okay. But the problem with iTunes is that there's 10 million podcasts. And how do you kind of rise above the top? And if you want to listen to a podcast, which one do you listen to? And so what Amazon is saying is, look, for those of you that are Audible customers paying a $15 per month fee and getting your two books every month, you're already listening to the spoken word, okay? So when you're done with your book, why do we want to send you to some other platform to get more spoken word in the form of podcasts? Why not just stay with us? We'll tell you a couple good podcasts to listen to.
And we'll give you exclusives, and we'll give you features you can't get anywhere else, like this media coverage.
That's correct. And now for those who would just subscribe to the $5 a month, you know, channels, I don't know how many people they're going to be able to attract to that, at least initially. I think much like Netflix, much like HBO, you want people to pay for just your service, and your service is aggregating other content, you're going to have to throw some exclusive content in
there. Well, that's what they have with the Times and USA Today and the Washington Post, and I think that's a lot more attractive than people recognize. But again, they'll come up with an original podcast that nobody has. It'll click like Serial. And suddenly everybody will want it.
That's right. And for $5 a month, why not?
And of course, if you want to find a great podcast, the best thing to do or help other people find it is to rate and review it.
That's right. You can rate and review our show on iTunes, the Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, you know, anywhere they give podcasts away for free or for $5 a month, apparently. You can rate and review our show, the Google Play Store. Please do subscribe to the shows there and subscribe to our show there and rate and review our show. It does help us out when you do that. Now, our next story is really, it feels very stiff. It's because it's about a robot, a Mr. Robot. The TV series Mr. Robot just hacked itself. The critically acclaimed show broke into a live chat about the upcoming season debut with a live stream of the first hour of the upcoming season debut.
Clever, clever, clever.
This was an amazing publicity stunt. USA Network then alerted others via Twitter that the stream would be available for a short period of time. It's all well in keeping with the paranoid thriller's zeitgeisty attitude. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop. It's a clever stunt, and I think the sell-by date of these things is about to disappear. People have done a number of these things, an early preview, out of nowhere drop, that sort of thing. It's clever. It's fine. It works very well with this show, but I don't think you're going to get much more bang for your buck when you do this in the 10th or 20th time.
I agree with you. Now, I would like to point out, you asked me to watch a show, and you did this like way back last September. You said, oh, you got to watch this Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a great show. So all of a sudden, it's on Netflix this weekend. Okay, and obviously it's going to be there for a while. And I start watching it. And this show is amazing. It's not going to be for everybody, just like every show is not for everybody. But this show, it's really, really good. The lead actress is fantastic. It's got music, it's got dancing, it's got, and it's a sitcom kind of.
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah,
it's very, very good. And she's very appealing. And I watched the first episode. I wanted to watch the next one. Mr. Robot, okay, I'd like to watch this show. Why? Because as you say, it's very zeitgeisty. It's very up right now. Everybody's talking about it. I can't do it. Why? It's not on Netflix. It's not on Amazon Prime. I finally found it on Hulu. And you know what? I'm not willing to pay Hulu. I have no desire to pay a third service.
Don't you have TV? Why don't you just watch it on USA?
Well, are they rerunning the episodes?
Probably.
If they rerun the episodes, I'll get to see them. If not, I will probably miss this until it winds up on another
service.
It's
on Blu-ray. Season one is on Blu-ray.
Oh, maybe I'll rent it. I don't know. But I don't even know where to go to rent it.
You're convincing that you had to look for it?
No, because you can go to Just Watch It or you know, one of these services to find out where. But when I did and I found out that it was only on one particular service, I thought, well, okay, now I'm not going to watch this.
So set your DVR.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to. That almost makes sense. Kind of like, Steven Soderbergh, a director, continuing to do, you know,
direct.
Yeah, yeah. He has a lot on his plate, in fact. He's mapping out the next two seasons of his period medical drama, The Nick, and might just direct them himself. That is a great show, by the way. Speaking of great shows, fantastic show. He's also got a TV movie with Sharon Stone called Mosaic that includes an interactive element that lets the audience decide the storyline. Soderbergh is also reteaming with Channing Tatum, this time to film a movie about a heist against the backdrop of NASCAR. And now he's got another movie lined up, this one based on the Panama Papers, the leaking of explosive financial records touching on world leaders and major business people and their tax havens. Now, can we all agree to get the jokes about how Soderbergh is not really retired out of our system as soon as possible? Big deal or big whoop?
Big whoop. Director works. We never really believed he'd be retired. He was plunged into a TV show anyway. We don't care what screen it's on. We just want to see the work. But clearly, we never really thought he was going to retire, and he hasn't.
Yeah, well, I think for a while there, he was going back-to-back-to-back movies, and I think, you know, and he was dealing with studios, and I think he just got tired of it all. And, you know, it's like Lionel Messi saying, that's it, I'm 29 years old, I'm not going to play international football, soccer anymore. I'm out of this World Cup game. It's like, really? Really? Because you're kind of young for that. You know that that was in the heat of the moment after losing a big game, after being the cause for losing that big game, or one of them, you know, he said something and he's probably not going to follow through on it, which we will all be better for. The streaming music service, Spotify, is growing by leaps and bounds. In June, they told the world that some 100 million people are actively using the digital music platform. Of course, most of them are only taking advantage of the free version of Spotify. But this month, the Swedish company says they've hit 35 million paying customers, a rate of growth that's the fastest in the company's history. If that keeps up, they'll gross some $2.5 billion in the next 12 months and send $1.7 billion of that money to the music rights holders, i.e. labels. Apple has 15 million paid subscribers and Tidal has more than 4 million, which means worldwide, some 55 million paid subscribers fork over money to access digital music. Big deal or big whoop?
I think it's a big whoop.
What?
I mean, if you multiplied that 55 million people by 10, you'd be getting somewhere.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a couple of years ago, and for the past couple, well, maybe not the past year, but like, I would say up to about a year ago, we kept hearing, you know, we just haven't made up for what we lost with DVDs, or not DVDs, CDs. And when 50 million people are subscribed to Spotify and these, you know, digital music services, then we're talking. That's what we need. We need 50 million people to be subscribed and paying to actually make it worth our while. Well, now 55 million people are paying. So how come it's, you know, you're making $1.7 billion from Spotify and probably another $1 billion from Apple and Tidal, maybe a little more, but it's $3 billion.
Maybe a little less, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you never know what the deals are. But at the end of the day, you're talking about, let's call it $3 billion when you lost 20.
So now the major labels are in early renegotiations with Spotify over the fees and the money that they get. Is the fact that Spotify's gotten this big mean they're going to have a harder stance or a softer stance? Do they need them more because they're the only source of money? Or do they say, hey, look, yeah, I know you got a nice business because you're using all our free content, so you got to give us more.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, 100 million people, it's basically 2/3 of the people using the service for free. And of course, there's ads that get played. And
they make some money there too, yeah.
They make some money, but not nearly as much as they do from paying customers, where they get 2/3 of all the money coming in. So, yeah.
I could have a great streaming service if you gave me access to all the content and all the major cable channels and networks, and I only had to charge, you know, $10 a month.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to hike their price.
All right.
Game of Thrones has been delayed again.
Damn you, George R.R. Martin.
Don't blame writer George R.R. Martin. You got to call this person Mother Nature. You got to blame the weather. First, HBO told us they weren't sure how many episodes would be contained in the final two seasons.
100?
230, maybe. You know, just enough to keep HBO afloat for the rest of time. Now, HBO tells us not to hold our breath waiting for season 7 to arrive. Winter is coming, and to capture that on film, the producers admitted they're going to have to delay some crucial shoots, you know, because
they're going to have to wait for winter.
Yeah, they actually need to wait for winter, apparently. A later start date means a later end date, which means a later premiere for season 7. You know what fans are saying? Hey, can we introduce you to the Southern Hemisphere? Big deal or big whoop?
But there's sets they been to before. They can't just change their sets. It's a big whoop, right? It's not great for HBO. They wish they could have a lot of episodes right away, but we'll survive.
Sure, augmented reality is all the rage, as we'll discuss in a moment. But people still love watching two guys try to beat each other up. That's why we keep doing Showbiz Sandbox.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
Right. For decades, it was boxing, and now it's mixed martial arts. The proof? In 2001, a group purchased the UFC company for about $2 million. This week, the UFC was sold for, get this, $4 billion. And you know what? There was no droid named R2-D2, because that's how much Lucasfilm sold for. $4 billion. The buyers? The combo of talent agency WME, which is William Morris Endeavor, and sports and fashion company IMG. I thought they were all the same now.
It is. Yeah. And they led a consortium of people who bought the UFC.
Okay. It follows their purchase of the professional bull riding tour for a much more modest $100 million and the Miss Universe pageant. Big deal or big whoop?
It feels like a little bit of a big overpay to me, but I don't know.
This is a huge,
It is, but like
sport.
You say, Lucasfilm cost $4 billion alone. You put out one movie, you make $2 billion, or you gross $2 billion. They're definitely buying at the peak, though. I mean, UFC could not be more popular right now. WME, IMG thinks they can grow it and they want live events. That seems to be what they think there's the future for a lot of what they're doing. It's kind of a weird business, you know, a talent agency / event owner. But
yeah,
they're putting together a big company, aren't they?
They most certainly are. And, this is a sport, UFC, that is so popular. I was in, I can't even remember which fight it was. I guess they number these fights. Number 200 was over the weekend. It was in the 190s, I believe. But there was some fight. The person who beat Ronda Rousey was fighting that evening, I believe. And I was in Alaska, and there were going to be two fights that night. And people were in a restaurant bar waiting for this fight to start 8 hours ahead of time. They were watching the UFC pay-per-view channel for 8 hours before the thing started.
That's pretty unusual. That's even for hardcore fans to get a good seat. That's pretty out there. Of course, it is Alaska.
It is Alaska. Maybe they didn't have anything else to do. That which is completely untrue. So people from Alaska, that was a joke. Okay, I was just joking. Alaska's a beautiful place. Everybody should go there. There's a lot to do.
All right, that leaves us out of Big Deal Big Whoop, doesn't it?
It does, and it moves us right along into Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business, and more importantly, how they affect you. And this week, trust me when I tell you, you will be hearing about augmented reality from now until at least the end of the year and beyond, especially because of this Pokemon Go. Over the week, last week, Sony released a Snapchat filter that allowed you to, become a Ghostbuster. That's augmented reality. What is augmented reality, Michael? Do you want to explain what it is?
Well, this is what people are doing all weekend long. Pokemon Go is a mobile game released by a company partially owned by Nintendo. They're sort of the overseers of Pokemon. And it hit mobile phones over the weekend and everybody started playing it. And basically you're running around the neighborhood or your house or your yard and looking on your phone, and through global mapping, you can see, oh, there is a Pokemon character standing by that tree, a Pokemon character sitting on your stove. So you're looking through your phone at the room you're in and seeing these virtual reality characters pop up into your real world setting. And that immediately sparked the question of, is it virtual reality? No, it's augmented reality, and debating why that is. So I met my friends in Nashville. Their kids were literally running around the streets.
Yes.
I don't know how parents are going to feel about this, but I literally, at 10 at night, the daughter said, can you please walk with me? I need to go get the Pokemon character. So I'm out with her walking 3 blocks down the street to go to the corner so she can get a Pokemon character and not be alone in the dark. The sun, they're driving down into the city. Oh, Pokemon. She wanted to stop because there was a Pokemon gym, a place where you train Pokemon to fight. So it's literally taken the video game and put it out in the real world. It's kind of amazing. But it did immediately start those questions about what's augmented versus virtual reality. Virtual reality, of course, is when you're immersed in a world. Typically, you'll see somebody wearing goggles and they're standing in a room. And in those goggles, they're just their entire reality is created by the computer program. With augmented reality, you're in the real world and you're having a superimposition of something. For example, if you had Google Glasses and you're walking down the street and you saw someone and they could identify them, on your Google Glasses, it would say Sperling Reich. Oh, that's Sperling. It's his birthday Tuesday. And I might say, hey, Sperling, I'm looking forward to your birthday on Tuesday. That's augmented reality. The same here with this game, where you're looking at the real world through your phone and your phone's camera and seeing the backyard of your house. But through your phone, you see there is a character sitting by the tree. Move the phone away, you don't see that Pokemon character. That's augmented. You're imposing some virtual imagery onto the real world or onto something like your glasses. Virtual reality is where you're immersed in the world.
So I always say, like, virtual reality, you're wearing goggles. Augmented reality, which actually is harder to pull off than virtual reality, because reality, you can draw everything. Everything is fake. Augmented reality, you actually are placing fake items or drawn items onto real life surfaces like the lawn or a stove or the barbecue, as you were saying earlier. That said, with augmented reality, I always liken it to the Terminator, when the Terminator is looking out and kind of, you know, he sees what's going on, but then there's
information flashing on his eye.
That's kind of augmented reality.
That is augmented reality.
Yes.
Right. So this is a game. It's launched over the weekend. Massive success. Truly out of the box smash hit. Our in-house critic, Aaron Rich, was at Brigham Young University doing some archival research. He said students were running around the quad, and you knew exactly what they were doing. seriously, they were running all over the campus doing stuff. Massive downloads for the game in the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. It's on 5% of all Android phones. That's the estimate. They overloaded the servers. People had problems with the games. They've delayed the launch in other territories so they can keep up with demand. But the biggest indication that it's a sort of a pop cultural phenomenon is media attention.
That is true.
People are dying. Fake reports of people dying, running into traffic without looking. But some funny stuff. Actual kids complaining of aching feet. Children got off the couch. It's like a trick to get kids to move. They're moving their feet. They didn't know they could do anything with their feet. And now they're complaining that their feet ache because they've been wandering around their neighborhood all afternoon.
Well, you know what? If it can help with childhood obesity, then I'm all for it.
That's right. Crime wave. Actual crime wave. Criminals hung up. You can do a beacon to let people know there are Pokemon characters nearby. And these criminals actually did that to lure people at 2 a.m. to a deserted parking lot, and they robbed them.
Well, so, here's course, the thing. If you're still playing Pokemon Go at 2 a.m, go to bed, okay?
You're a college student. You know, it's not just for children.
Yeah, it is. Cool. It is the most popular search and the most popular item in iTunes.
Well, sure. So there are also absurd claims. The Guardian reported there's anecdotal evidence that Pokemon Go is helping depressed and lonely people get out and about.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. So clearly people are just crazed. They're talking about it. Is it important? Is it big? I really think it is.
Yeah, no, this is first of all, I remember when they released the trailer for this and everybody was like, wow, it's great. And then that was like a year ago. Okay. They didn't have anything after that. Well, I completely forgot about it in the meantime. And look at it now. I knew it was going to be huge then, but now it's really huge.
Right. And Nintendo stock is reflecting that. Even though they did not technically release the game, it's a third-party company that specializes in augmented reality. That's the company that released this game. Nintendo owns one-third of them. They also own a chunk of the Pokemon company, which sort of oversees the Pokemon world, I guess. I'm not quite sure why that was set up. But again, they're profiting from it in those companies and with their own stock, which had its biggest single day surge in 30 years. Since this game came out, they have added $7 billion in value to Nintendo's stock. That will obviously come back down a little bit, but that's big news. And it is Nintendo plunging into mobile gaming, isn't it? They've really avoided mobile gaming. Now they've got a social app that did pretty well called Miitomo, and they have more mobile titles coming out later this year.
Well, because think about it. When you really think about it, right? Nintendo, they're a hardware software manufacturer. They like to sell you the hardware. That's where they make some money, i.e. Apple, you know? In this case, they're not selling you the hardware. They're giving you a game, okay? And, of course, there's in-app purchases, which Apple must be loving this, by the way.
Yeah.
Because Apple keeps, you know, as we mentioned last week, 30% of the in-app purchase. But... you know, even though I forgot about it, it does not surprise me at all. This is a hit, and I'm surprised.
Well, they did a good job with it. It's a hit because it's really cool and fun. And this is my point. Yes, Nintendo is moving more fully into mobile gaming. Why not make money when you can? But this is not a simple case of, repurposing a game
no.
and making it work on your phone. So when you're wandering around, you can still play the game when you're not by your console. This is augmented reality. This is an entirely new experience. You cannot do this sitting on your couch.
No.
You are out in the real world. It's crazy. It's cool. And they're only going to get better at it. And this really is a big step forward for augmented reality and virtual reality. And I've been Mr. Cross my arms and say, call me when people can actually buy something and play with it and see what it's like. Well, now here's where we are.
Well, I love what the Darwin Police Station in the Northern Territory in Australia wrote. They actually hung a sign outside their building, okay, that said, please be advised that you don't actually have to step inside in order to gain the Pokeballs. Okay, that's what this post is not only on Facebook, but hung outside their police station. It's also a good idea to look up away from your phone and both ways before crossing the street.
Yes, very funny. And they made some joke about some evil character as well.
Yeah, that Sandshrew isn't going anywhere fast.
Yeah, so they're having fun with it. So I really do think this is the tip of the virtual reality spear. This is putting it mainstream. People can stop from going, what is this? To going, I want that.
Yes,
and that's a big change. You're going to see more and more and more of it. And the more excited you are by augmented reality, the more likely you are to want to put on some goggles and try virtual reality.
Which is, in my opinion, a completely different experience. And the only similarity between VR and AR is the fact that you're looking at or through something, okay, and the word reality. Those are the two similarities. Otherwise, they're completely different.
Okay.
And of course, when there's a phenomenon like this, kind of like Avatar, you're always going to see games like this being done poorly, like 3D being done poorly on most of the films that came after Avatar.
Oh, sure.
Everybody's
sure,
going to
sure.
try and jump into this, and they're going to do a bad job of it. Hopefully, that won't destroy it.
No, it won't.
But certainly, you know what? We're taking 2 weeks off, remember?
You're taking 2 weeks
off. I'm taking 2 weeks.
I will be here talking to our fans. They just won't be able to hear me.
Speaking of which, you might recall last week, okay, we mentioned that Purge the Election was directed and written by James DeMonaco, or Jim DeMonaco, who worked with Gary Netto on films like Red and Jack. And you mentioned something about Jack. Well, he put a comment on our link on Facebook from last week's show, and he said, thanks for the shout out. Love your co-host. So you have a fan. Just one.
Well, but I got one.
Exactly. But yeah, actually, we are on Facebook. If you search for Showbiz Sandbox, you can find our page. And of course, we are also on Twitter. At Showbiz Sandbox is our handle. We have to get more active on Twitter, actually, now that I mention it. Again, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, the Microsoft Marketplace, the Google Play Store, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. Please do rate and review the show. All that information can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find links to all the stories we talked about on today's show and ways to contact us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. Or you can, like Gary did, go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. You can also call us. 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Again, all of this information is on our website, showbizsandbox.com. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their website, who is mgmt.com. Michael, you have a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's I'm available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, and podcasts.com. Because you're away for 2 weeks.
That's true. And I would say that's a standing offer.com.
Pretty much .com.
Well, if you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there, head on over to the Huffington Post, or, you know, all of his work is aggregated at michaelgiltz.com. Of course, remember to check out bookfilter.com. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until 3 weeks from now, play nice.